Today on episode number 385 of the School of Podcasting's Morning Announcements, which you can find at schoolofpodcasting.com/385, we're going to have a discussion with Andrew Zarian from the Guys from Queens Network. He started podcasting in 2009 and now has made a living out of it.
The School of Podcasting with Dave Jackson.
Podcasting since 2005. I am your personal podcast coach, Dave Jackson. Thanking you so much for tuning in. I realize, especially now as I record this, it's December 2013. You got a lot of things on your plate, and the fact that maybe you're dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh with me in your ears, and I am deeply appreciative of that. If you're new to the show, this is where we talk about all things podcasting, from planning to promoting to recording. All points in between. I bring my 20 plus years of technical training to the microphone as we flatten the learning curve. And if you are a person that is looking to start podcasting, and this is going to be a serious hobby, if that makes any sense. It's kind of a one of those like jumbo shrimp. It's a serious hobby that you hope someday may turn into a career. You are in the right spot. And today we have an interview with Andrew Zarian from the Guys from Queens Network. You can find that at GFQnetwork.com. And a couple quick updates here, because it's a long interview, and because here's a guy that's making a living podcasting, so I really wanted to go in depth with him. But I do have some quick updates here. I want to say, number one, if you missed last week's episode, here's your homework assignment. You can either use the go out to schoolofpodcasting.com/contact and use the button there to leave a message. You can, if you've got a microphone plugged in, you can just do it via SpeakPipe, or you can call in your comments 888-563-3228. And I want to hear, if you had to pick one podcast, only one, your absolute can't live without podcast, what is it? Where can I find it? What's it about? And why is it your favorite podcast? Send that along with who you are, obviously, and what your podcast is about and where we can find it. And we're going to assemble all these and play them later on in December. So it's a great way to get some promotion for your podcast, as well as sharing great podcasts with the audience. Because in theory, we know there's a lot of crap out there, and I'm trying to give some spotlight to the good stuff. So we're going to have a special episode. That's all we're going to talk about. Other podcasts coming up here in the future. Other big news here. If you go to schoolofpodcasting.com/ask coach, that's schoolofpodcasting.com/ask coach, because Ask the Podcast Coach is now in iTunes. That's right. The podcast that I started in April is now officially a podcast. I did it as kind of a test. It's something I do every Saturday, 10:30 a.m. on Eastern, where we answer your podcast questions. We take live calls. You can find it every Saturday at schoolofpodcasting.com/live. And we finally decided to make it official. And it's now on iTunes if you want to subscribe. It's also in Stitcher. And I want to say, I switched from podcasts app from Apple last week to Stitcher just to try it. I love it. I love the fact that I can tweet and say, this is a cool episode. Last week, I was listening to Mike Russell and Isabella, the Music Radio Creative podcast, and they were interviewing some guy from the UK about being yourself in your podcast. It was really entertaining, and I was like, tweet that bad boy, and I was so happy to see that in the podcast app, it tweets the RSS feed. That's kind of stupid. And this sent a link right to this episode. Very, very cool. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Learn to Podcast. And so far, I'm loving it. I will give you more on that in the future. But right now, I want to get to my interview with Andrew from the Guys from Queens Network. Here we go. All right. Well, joining me via Skype, he has been podcasting since 2009. I met him on the Podcasters Roundtable. And when I heard that he was up and running and basically doing this for a living, I was like, oh, now there is the story I want to check out. You can find him. He runs the Guys from Queens Network, and you can find that at gfqnetwork.com. He's got about 17 shows over there. So, Andrew Zarian, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Dave, thank you so much for having me. I had such a great time with you on the Podcasters Roundtable, and we reconnected. I'm excited to be on here.
So I just want to go through your story. So you started in 2009. What made you kind of did? What were you listening to podcasts? What kind of got you into the game?
It's funny. I don't remember ever saying like, oh, I'm going to download a podcast prior to doing this. But I was always a fan of radio. I grew up in New York City, listened to Howard Stern. I was a big talk radio fan, and I just always had that interest. But it was never something that I would say, okay, this is what I want to do. I got laid off from my job. I had a business. I had sold the business, and I was doing IT work. I got laid off from my IT job, and I was sitting at home. I had nothing to do. I was just bored. So one of my buddies, Kunal Arora, he's a stand-up comic. He called me. He goes, hey, do you want to do like a podcast? I'm like, what's a podcast? He's like, it's like a radio show, but you know, people download it and they listen to it, and we gave it a shot, and that's pretty much how I started.
So you have somewhat of a technical background then if you're working in IT. Did you have any background in radio or anything like that?
No. I mean, the only audio thing that I had ever done was install a stereo system in my car. I mean, I had virtually no experience with any of this. But I have a good understanding of technology, so it was kind of easy for me to understand how everything worked.
Gotcha. So what was that first show that you started?
So the first show that I started, it was called The Andrew and Kunal Show, and it was just just two guys just BSing and just talking about nonsense, whatever came to mind, and it was awful. I mean, it was awful for a long time. And we had a weird setup. When we did the podcast around it, we were talking about, you know, podcasting setups, our initial setup. My setup, my wife used to call it the bus driver, where I used to sit in front of the computer and everybody else used to sit behind me and I used to face the wall. So nobody ever looked at each other. Everybody was just facing either the back of someone's head or the wall. It got better. I mean, we started getting more structured and we started adding, you know, production elements into it. But it took about 3 or 4 months for us to kind of understand what we're doing and to kind of get some sort of viewership.
That's wild. So were you all sharing one microphone?
Well, at one point we did. One of the setups was I would be in my office, my co-host would be in my kitchen, and he would Skype me.
Okay.
From my kitchen, because we didn't have a mixer. So he had a USB microphone, I had a USB microphone, and then I was just recording the conversation on my side. Then we got a mixer, and you know, we ended up doing it that way. But it was a bizarre setup, and I always said I wish some of these communities like we have on Facebook and on a Google, I wish those existed then, because it would have made my life a lot easier.
Well, the cool thing is, though, it didn't stop you. That's what I love about it. You persevered. You went through.
No, I was talking to my wife about this, and when I started doing it, my wife's like, oh, yeah, it's great. You got a hobby. Are you looking for a job? Oh, great. That's great. You're doing a podcast. How was the job hunt today? And she never really was like, listen, Andrew, you got to go and get a job. Like, you've been you haven't found anything in a couple months. She thought it would pass, just like every other thing. You know, I got into photography. I got into video stuff. And it would pass after a couple of months. I get bored with it or I get frustrated and I'd leave. But this just never passed. And, you know, a year into doing this, she's like, he's actually doing this full time. Like, this has become his job. And that was actually a fascinating conversation to have, where she's like, you're not going back to work, are you? And I go, I don't think so.
Well, that's going to be a great feeling, though, isn't it? Or is it scary?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of scary. It's still scary because, yeah, it's my full-time job. But, you know, if two advertisers leave, how am I going to make that money up?
Right.
You know, there's still that what if. You know, what's going to happen next quarter? What's going to happen in 6 months? You know, this is all still new. It's still the Wild West. I consider it like the Wild West right now, where, you know, anything could happen in podcasting. You know, it's stabilizing, but I still think the internet broadcasting world is pretty unstable. We don't have a way of doing things. We don't have long-term statistics on what works and what doesn't. So anything could disrupt it. And if that happens, you know, I gotta go out and figure something else out.
Well, when did the idea come up then to build a network?
I was talking to Mike Phillips about this. We were having a discussion. Mike is a tech guru in audio, and I think a lot of us go to him for audio advice in the podcasting world. And I was talking, he brought this up. He asked me what made me think about doing a network. And I don't think I ever said I'm going to do a podcasting network. I just think it was like, hey, I like cars. I'm going to talk about cars. I like technology. Let me start doing a tech show. And let me do my comedy show and let's do a call-in show. So I think it was like three shows in. I think we were doing a car show, a tech show, and my show. I think the discussion was like, wow, this is kind of becoming a network. Let's see how many other shows we could add. And I think the goal at that point was to do at least five shows a week. So I think it took about 8 months when we were like, okay, we're doing something here. So why don't we add more to it?
Well, when you first started off with your show and then you started to add these shows, was it something that at the time you thought, okay, were you already thinking like sponsors and how can I make this to work? Or was it just at that point still just a hobby in your head?
It was a hobby, and I was trying to milk how long this could go on without me having to, like, you know, go and get a job. I was kind of okay financially at that point because I had sold a business and I had some money. So I think it was just like a mental vacation for me where I didn't have to worry about going and hunting for this job. I just said, okay, I'm going to take a couple months off. I could take a year off, and I'm just going to try to figure out what I'm going to do next. And it just spun into that, really. It wasn't this is my career. I think it was maybe a year and a half in where we got our first advertiser. So I think our first advertiser was January of 2011, and we had started in April of 2009. So it was about a year and a half where we got a big advertiser, and it was like, wow, that's a lot of money. We're getting money for this. So it took about a year and a half until we were like, okay, this is a full-time job.
And did they approach you or did you approach them?
No, they found me. They were actually, my first ad was a local company. It was a diet company. They were doing food, you know, delivery systems, like diet food delivered to you. And they had found us because they were looking to advertise on the internet. So they looked up, you know, Queens, New York radio show, and we came up.
Interesting. So do you consider, like, your network, I know it's obviously guys from Queens, do you consider it really like super New York biased, or?
It's funny because we did the name as a spoof because I'm a New Yorker, but when you think of Queens, New York, every time when you think of Queens, New York on television, it's always, you know, a rapper that's from Queens or some crime story that's in Queens. But when it was like a big joke when I would tell people I'm from Queens, I would tell them the town in Queens that I'm from. And they're like, oh, that's Long Island. That's not Queens. So Mike Kunal at the time when we started, he's like, oh, we should be the guys from Queens because we're not like big, tough guys. And I said, OK, I think that's a funny name and it's local. But we immediately our local following, you know, we had a nice local following, but it was nothing compared to the national audience that we were able to build off of the name. So we kind of adapted the GFQ brand over the guys from Queens name.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still weird because I still tell them, I'm like, yeah, it's the guys from Queens Network, but not really. We're GFQ. And if I had thought about doing this for the long term, I probably would not have gone with the name guys from Queens. But I think at this point, it kind of represents who we are. And I guess it's cute to some people.
Well, that and all the shows are actually produced right there in your studio, is that correct?
In my studio, yeah. Luckily for me, I have a pretty nice size house, and it's a big old house, so we have plenty of room. So I took a corner of the first floor, and I've dedicated it to be the studio. So we've kind of converted everything over. We have the lightings, and we have the cameras. So when we have guests over for like the holidays, it's almost like a showpiece. We're like, and this is the studio. And they're like, oh my God, that's like, this is in a house. And I go, yeah, it's in my house. This is where I work.
That's got to be fun when you have the 10-second commute.
You know? Sometimes it takes a little longer than 10, Dave. You know, maybe 20 seconds here and there. But I mean, I couldn't ask for anything better. There's no commute. I don't have to worry about shoveling the snow to get out to go to work. I don't have to worry about the New York traffic. I went to the bank, which is literally down the block, and I spent 20 minutes in traffic trying to get into the bank. So New York traffic is absurd at times. So I'm really lucky in that sense that I don't have to go anywhere to do this.
You get your first big sponsor, and there's a lot of people listening right now that's like, oh, man, I wish that was me. What was – obviously, we know the good side of that because you're like going, hey, look, money. Is there a negative side to that, something that you're like, oh, I didn't think about that?
Oh, absolutely. We weren't ready to take a sponsor. I mean, it's crazy to say if I could do it again, I would have probably turned them down and said, why don't we do this in a couple months? We really had never had a sponsor like that before. And, you know, you build a relationship. I feel like every one of our advertisers now, we've built a relationship with them. And even if they're not, let's say they're not happy this month, we know how to make it up the following month and we know how to give them the proper attention. At that point, we had no idea what we were doing. So, you know, we had some problems with them and, you know, overall they were okay. They were happy with what we got, but could they have gotten a lot more from us if they had signed on a year later? Absolutely. Will they sign on again? Probably not, because it wasn't this, wow, look at all the business that we're getting, because we really didn't know what we were doing at that time.
So for somebody that wants a sponsor, you know, how do you get ready for a sponsor?
I think your audience has to be – you have to have a decent-sized audience for that, whatever topic you're discussing. So a decent-sized audience, what does it mean? Does it mean you got to have a million viewers? No, but depending on what you're talking about, you have to have a dedicated community that will support whatever you're advertising, whatever your sponsor is. You know, is a diet company the right fit for the GFK network? Probably not. I mean, they had some results. I know a lot of people signed up, but it wasn't – the target audience that they could have gotten if, you know, maybe it was a diet show. So it's I don't know. I mean, at this point, what would I have done differently? It would definitely been, you know, maybe waited, maybe learned, you know, how to deal with the customer too, because they were always anticipating much more. It's like magazine sale. You know, when you put an ad in a paper, you're not going to get the result the following day when someone reads it. I mean, that's the reality. So you right. got to constantly advertise to kind of penetrate that audience. It's like a billboard. When you see a Coke ad, when you're driving down the highway, are you going to pull over to the 7-Eleven next to you and buy a can of Coke? No, you're going to go to the grocery store maybe 2 weeks later and buy Coke because it's in your head. So I've learned a lot about marketing and advertising because of the mistakes I've made. I would tell people, A, have the audience, and two, really understand how to talk to the client, because at the end of the day, they're giving their money and they want to see a result.
Right. Now, how are they – are you using – like I know sometimes you'll get like a coupon code to prove that they came from you, or sometimes you send them to, you know, their website, maybe GFQ or something to show the traffic. How are you helping the sponsor understand that this traffic came from me?
At that time or now?
Both.
So at that time, I think what we had done with them was, you know, we had a link on our website, so they were seeing how much traffic they were getting, and that was kind of the problem too, because our audience wasn't going to our website to listen to the show. They were, you know, they were downloading it or they were listening to it live instantly. So we didn't really have a promo code. We were telling people to go to our website and click on the link. Now what we do, everything is tracked. I mean, we have links on our website. We have links within the blog. We have a promo code. So whoever the advertiser is for that month, we have a specific promo code and then changes the following month. We have a code for specific shows. So it's pretty much it's as foolproof as it can be.
Right.
Obviously, you're going to have people that go to the website and not put in your promo code. That happens all the time. We had a big problem with an advertiser where we were running similar campaigns with a competing show. It was the same exact ad, and their show was on Tuesday and our show was on Wednesday. And when people would go to, you know, they would hear it on our show, they would put in the Tuesday code because they had initially heard it on that show. So we've had that happen too, where, you know, it didn't really work out that well. There's a lot that goes into it, Dave. I mean, you know how it is. It's not a cut and dry thing. It's not black or white. There's a lot of gray in the middle, and unfortunately, you don't get credit for the gray.
Right. And it sounds like, I know we've talked kind of off mic, you take a lot of you don't rush into a sponsorship with someone because you realize at this point that product has to fit your audience. So how do you go about making that decision?
We've actually turned down a ton of ads. We generally, even if the show is not, you know, super family friendly, we like to keep the advertiser family friendly. So we've turned down a lot of ads based on that. There's a lot of, you know, dating websites out there that we've turned down. There's a lot of, you know, adult products that we've turned down that some podcasts do. Yeah, I could get the money from them, and I'm sure there are people that are going to buy it. But what does that mean for my brand? What does that mean for my audience? Is another advertiser going to get turned off? So, that's something that we consider when we're taking an advertiser. But what I like to do first with a company that I kind of like, I'm not afraid to run the affiliate ad first to, you know, for a month, maybe before I even approach them. I'll run the affiliate ad, see if there's any kind of response. if there's a response, and I won't really, you know, push it as much as I'm pushing, you know, the paid ads. I'll just introduce it to my audience and see if it works. And if I see something that's when I approach them and I say, hey, listen, we ran a program. We were just doing a trial. We only ran it on maybe one or two shows that month. And we saw some sort of result, and we saw some sort of, you know, discussion based on that. Why don't we, you know, talk about this if you're doing advertising? If we're approaching a company, most of our ads right now are coming from Podtrac. They're responsible to getting us the ad.
And then it's just a matter of figuring out if it's a good fit or not.
They pretty much control all that. You know, they'll come to me and say, hey, listen, we have a online backup solution company. Does that work for this show? And, you know, most of the time they're pretty good at picking the ad to correspond with the show.
And that's who the advertiser then is getting the stat numbers through Podtrac, or do they do that directly through you?
No, I you know what's, it's funny. I've never spoken to any of the advertisers that they have gotten me. They do all of that. I speak to whoever's in charge there, and they tell me if the ads are, they're happy with the ads or if they're not happy with the ads and what our promo code is. It's actually, it's, they make it very easy for me to get, you know, get constant revenue. But the downside of that is that I've gotten a little lazy with going and getting my own ads because they're doing all the legwork at this point.
Hmm. Yeah, I can see that. If it's just coming in, it's like, all right, I'll just kick back and see what comes down the pike. But interesting. The you mentioned that you have to have, you know, a decent sized audience. When you first started out, what were you doing to promote your shows?
So I mean, at that point, I had no. When we started, I would just go on Facebook and tell my friends, and you know, my co-host was a stand-up comic, and he had a lot of comedy friends, so we would have, you know, his friends on that were doing comedy. So it was kind of like a word of mouth thing that kind of got us an audience. But our big break came when we started doing the show live. At that point, Stickam was around, and I went on there and I was just testing out different, you know, live streaming solutions. We tried Ustream, we tried Stickam. And when I connected to Stickam, I got a message from somebody that was working. They go, oh, you're in Queens. I go, yeah, I'm in Queens. They go, oh, my boyfriend lives in Queens. I'm actually in California. I'm moving to Queens. Why don't I feature you on the front page? And we said, that's great. That we're going to get a feature on the front page. And I think we had like, and I don't know what the number really means, but I think at that point it was like 25,000 viewers for that hour or 2 hours that we were on. At that point, I mean, obviously they weren't coming from my website. They were just coming from the Stickam website, and it was just people that were just clicking on the front page and exiting out. But we're like, oh my gosh, look at that. Look at the number. That's 25,000 eyeballs on this. So when we started doing the show live and we started getting featured, it kind of brought in an audience that we could have never reached because they had no idea who we were.
Interesting. And has it always been video, or did you start off with audio and then go into video? Or
we did about like maybe a month of just audio, and we immediately went into video. I mean, it wasn't good video. It was actually awful, but it was, I mean, it was just like a Logitech camera just pointing from the ceiling down, and we were just sitting in a dark room. So it was nothing to really watch. But I mean, just being live at that point, because not too many people were doing a live show and not too many people were doing like a live podcast. You know, even if you tuned in and you hated it, you still tuned in. We're like, oh, okay, that's pretty cool. Okay, bye. I'm going to leave now.
Right. Do you know what your numbers are compared, not so much exact numbers, but in terms of like, is it 10 to 1, 5 to 1, in terms of how many people are consuming your content as a time shifted, you know, later versus your live audience?
I did it a while ago, and it was maybe like 20% was live. It's not big. You know, it goes up and down depending on the type of show that we're doing. Some shows do better live. We have a show like the Chauncey Hayden show we were talking. That show does nothing live. So we actually stopped airing it live. It was just at a bad time. It wouldn't do well live. But, you know, like the Friday Night Free For All, that show does tremendous live. So it fluctuates depending on the show. But I want to say maybe 20% of our audience is live. Everything else is still download. And it's mostly audio download. The video download is starting to catch up now, but it's mostly still audio.
That was going to be my other question. Do you put these out as both audio and video then?
Audio and video. We put it on our website. We put it on all the podcasting directories. We're using FeedBurner to push everything out. And we're still seeing, you know, the audio is still king. So if we have, I'm just throwing a number, 10,000 viewers for that specific episode for the audio, it'll maybe be 3,000 for the video.
Okay.
It's still, I mean, it's it's gone up. Over the last year, I saw a trend of it going up, but it's still all people are consuming this in the car and on MP3 players on their phones. So it's difficult to sit there and watch it compared to listening to it and doing whatever you're doing.
Right. Now, what technology are you using? Because I'm sure you said you started off with Stick'Em, and there are, you know, there's all sorts of different Ustream and things like that. What are you using now to stream your show?
So we're using Wirecast. We have two Wirecast machines. One just encodes it and sends it to the CDN. So it's sending it to Ustream, Justin TV, Vaughn, and Daily Motion. Just this, you know, the encoding box. The other box, we're doing all the switching and all the camera stuff and the lower thirds, the imaging, everything is going through that. So we have two separate systems just, you know, handling the video because it's too much for one computer to pretty much handle.
Right. And then for somebody that's thinking about going this route, this is one of those things where that's not a buy one, get one free kind of system. What does Wirecast usually run for?
I think it's $500 for the regular version, and the pro version is $1,000, a little shy of $1,000. But compared to some of the other solutions, you know, we've used VidBlaster also, and I think when you compare the two, VidBlaster is $2,000 compared to $1,000. I mean, at the end of the day, they come out about the same, but I feel that with Wirecast, you're getting a little bit more bang for your buck.
Very cool. And then what have you gone through in terms of video equipment? Like, what did you start? Well, you said you started off with just a Logitech. Along the way, are there things you go, I wish I would have skipped that step and just gone to this?
Oh, there's a lot. I mean, we wasted a lot of money building, you know, different encoding machines. So at one point, it was like we were running a giant server here. We had four computers just sending out the video, and one computer could have handled it. So it's a lot of wasted money in building systems. We've changed cameras a bunch of times. Right now we're using my shot is a Canon HF G10. I have another Canon camera. And then I still actually use a webcam for the third shot because we rarely use it at this point. But the third shot is still a webcam. So we're incorporating some of the old stuff that we're still doing. And that's the thing. And one thing that I'll tell people, if I could do it again, I probably would not have built these crazy machines to do Skype and to do all the encoding. I would most probably just do a Google Hangout and just record the Hangout.
You know, a lot of people are going that route.
It's smart. It's, you know, as a beginner, listen, when you're getting into higher production and when you want to have, you know, video elements incorporated in your show, and you know that there's an audience and you know that you can make a couple bucks from this, it's great. You know what? Spend all the money you want to kind of fix up the infrastructure behind what you're doing. But I tell people all the time, I'm like, I wouldn't get any of that. Get a nice webcam, get a decent microphone, and get a computer that could handle you doing, you know, Google Hangouts, and just bring in your guests that way.
Yeah, because all they need is a Google account and a camera on their side and a microphone and off to the races.
Yeah, and you know, just some simple editing software. You could cut the beginning and cut the end, and you just send it that way. You know, that would have saved me a lot of money early on because it's a lot of wasted money on things that just didn't work.
Yeah. Now, who's your hosting through?
For the website, we have a trade agreement with GoDaddy. GoDaddy provides us with dedicated servers for our shows.
Oh, cool. That makes life easy.
So they're pretty much hosting everything.
Wow. Because I know it was really cool when I was on the IAIB Spotlight. You know, you sent me over a code. I actually put that on my blog, and I'm like, I was trying to figure out, like, where is this coming from? What's this pointing back to?
For the video, I should say this. For the video, it's hosted on Blip, actually. Blip provides us with the hosting for our video. Early on, I built a decent relationship with them, and they were great to us. So we have different accounts for each show, and they're you know, they've been wonderful at letting us, you know, use them as our hosting provider for our video.
Are there any shows besides your first one that have come and gone?
Oh, a ton. I mean, I'm not – when it comes to pride, I'll put my pride aside and I'll do what's best for business. But we have canceled shows, I mean, left and right. There's a couple of shows that I regret canceling because it was doing really well, but there was problems with the host and, you know, they got a job and they couldn't commit the time. Mm-hmm. But there are other shows that just don't work. And the way that I measure it is I give the show 22 weeks. And we were talking about this on the IAIB Spotlight, where shows come and go within 22 weeks. Why? Because, A, people get bored. B, it's not doing well at all, or C, they're not making the money that they want to make. So I kind of take that 22-week, six-month time frame to kind of build the audience. I don't even think about monetizing it. If you have a concept for a show, I have no problem giving you a show. I'll do all the editing. I'll do all the work because you're investing your time in doing a show, and I'm hopefully going to be able to make money from it in a year from now. But in 6 months, if you have not been able to grow the audience to something that I'm seeing as, okay, it could be profitable, you know, we'll cancel it. And I have no problem. You know, you want to go and do it on your own? Absolutely. Go ahead and do it. You put in all the time. No problem. But it just didn't work for me.
Interesting. Yeah, that is the key. Because, you know, we were talking when you interviewed me, you know, it's kind of a joke, but kind of not. If somebody goes, how do I grow my audience now? The first thing I say is don't quit.
Don't quit. Absolutely.
Cause,
yeah.
Because the minute you do, that's the thing that just blows me away is.
Dave, I always tell people I'm not great at what I do. I enjoy what I'm doing. I'm passionate, but I'm not great at it. And I shouldn't be. I've only been doing this for, you know, almost 5 years now. The key in, you know, making money and becoming a network is you're consistently decent. And that's how I describe people. I'm like, I'm consistently decent. I have good shows. I have some great shows. And I have mostly okay shows. If I'm continuing to do this, I'm getting better and I'm able to grow my audience with that. So I'm consistently decent.
Well, the thing I also saw when I was on your show, I was watching the chat room. And, you know, we didn't really even interact with the chat room at the time. We were just talking. But it was interesting because they were doing their own show. Like, they were talking to each other, and I was like, wow.
No, there's a show within a show, and that's another weird thing, because I use them as my brain most of the time. You know, when we're doing a show, like we're doing What the Tech, and I'm talking about something, I'm talking about a phone that I like, and I say something wrong, they'll tell me, like, hey, Andrew, no, you were wrong. It's 8 megapixels, not 5 megapixels. So it kind of helps when I could correct myself, just on the fly, and be like, oh, no, I was wrong, it's 8 megapixels, but they end up doing their own thing. Like, sometimes we're talking about something and we're done. We've moved on and they're just continuing the discussion. And I think that's what helps build the community. My chat room has really become – I really think it's one of the reasons why we've been able to build an audience, is because people come in there. They have friends – I mean, they're friends with each other and they do their own Google Hangouts. And there's like a little community based around the network.
Interesting. And then in terms of that technology, what kind of chat software are you using?
IRC.
Okay. Good old standard.
Good old IRC. I mean, this, not much has changed since it started, but it's the most stable out of all of them. I kind of don't like the Facebook integration and the Twitter integration. I kind of want to keep it simple. I want the chat to be its own thing. So when people come in for the chat, they come in for the chat. A lot of people, you know, they have their own IRC clients and they're always logged in. It's something that I feel comfortable with. I know there are a lot of other chat, like Chatroll, and I forget the other one. There's another one that's pretty popular. But I feel like with IRC, it's stable. People understand it. People know how it's working, and it's real time.
Well, that's it. I mean, and it has to work. You can't, all of a sudden it just goes down and there's nothing to chat with. I know there's Chatwing I've played with. I'm trying to think of the other one. But it is interesting to, especially when you get a lot of people in there, to even just keep up with the amount of information that's going across the screen.
It gets crazy. Like, when we do the Apple events, we had like 1,100 people in the chat room.
Wow.
And at that point, there's no following the chat. It's just words going across and scrolling. So there are some negatives because you can't really follow what's happening. So when that happens, I tell people to send me questions via Twitter or whatever. But I mean, that's a rare thing to get 1,000 people in the chat. Most of the time, you know, it's anywhere from 50 to maybe 400, depending on the show.
Wow. Well, you said the show kind of kicked into gear when you went live. What are, if somebody is thinking about going live, because I always tell people when you first start off, you know, maybe hold off on the live thing until you get used to talking into a microphone. And because really at first you don't have an audience, because people are like, well, I want to interact with my audience. And they go, you don't have one yet. Let's get used to talking into a microphone. So when you went from doing it just pre-recorded to live, what were some of the lessons you learned when you first stuck your toe in the live water?
I'm very uncomfortable doing a pre-recorded show. Mm-hmm. I for whatever reason, I feel like when it's live, if I set it, I said it and it's out there and it's done. I'm not going to you know, dwell on it. I'm not going to edit it out. The best that I could do is remember the mistakes that I've made and not do it the following time. And I feel comfortable with that. I feel comfortable with the ums and the uhs and maybe the little pause while I'm thinking. And my audience kind of likes that. They like the raw version of what we're doing. But if someone is looking to start doing this, I would say, you know, do it for a month or so to get comfortable with it.
There you go.
At times, I feel like with me, and I don't know with you, I'm far more articulate if someone is sitting next to me. Because then I feel like, well, if I pause for too long, I have him to come in. And I feel that with the chat room. I feel like because there's somebody watching and I could interact with them to some level, I feel comfortable and I'm able to kind of have a two-way conversation even though there's nobody there.
Did you say that you take phone calls on some of your shows?
We do, yeah. We take phone calls on Friday nights.
Okay, now how do you pull that off?
We have a Telos HX6. We have a phone system.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is...
Yeah, so we have an 800 number and people call in and... You know, they could either do that or we do Skype too sometimes. We've even used Blog Talk Radio, and I was never a fan of Blog Talk Radio because of the poor audio quality.
Right.
I know a lot of people use it because they have a built-in audience and you're able to build a community around the show. And it's pretty easy. I mean, you could pretty much pick up a phone and do a radio show. But their call-in system, I mean, out of all the call-in systems, it is probably the easiest and probably the best one. I mean, you know, IP-based call-in system that exists, and it's pretty affordable too.
Yeah, the only one I've found that has all the same features, it's not quite as pretty, I'll give them that, their interface is pretty, is a website called callinstudio.com, mm-hmm. and it's $6 a month for the line, and I think it's 3 cents a minute per caller, something like that. What did your Telos system run you, if you don't mind me asking?
Telos, they're a sponsor of the network.
Oh, okay.
So Telos actually outfitted our entire studio here. And we have another studio in L.A. Spencer Copen does a show, and they outfitted their studio also with, you know, a lot of goodies, a phone system there. And we got the Axia board, and we have Omnia audio processing. And they pretty much did our entire studio here.
Beautiful. That's another.
Yeah, they came out here. They came out here and they just redid everything. It was actually unbelievable.
Very cool. Well, let's talk about some of the shows that are on the network. You have 17, and it looks basically you're kind of primary on. It looks kind of male based, obviously, and
it is. Yeah.
Hence the guys from Queens, and then kind of tech shows. So you want to give a quick rundown on each show or?
Yeah, sure. I got to pull it up, actually, to see what we
have. Well, here we go. You have What the Tech.
What the Tech. I do that show with Paul Theroux. He does, you may know him from the Twit Network. He does Windows Weekly with Leo Laporte. And Paul and I have been doing it for a couple of years now where we just, it's two, the way that I describe it is two guys at a bar and they love technology. And they'll rant and rave about it. They'll talk about what they like. They'll talk about what they don't like. I don't claim that you're going to learn anything from it. I may change your opinion on something, or you may think that I'm an idiot. But it's generally two guys just talking about technology.
Very cool. And then the Chauncey Hayden show?
Chauncey, we were talking off the air. He's formerly from the Howard Stern show. He was with them for many, many years. He's a celebrity journalist, so he's a gossip columnist. He was here in New York. He's infamous, actually. In New York, and a lot of people, I don't like going out in public with him because people turn around and they'll, you know, give him the finger because, you know, he's infamous in New York. He does a celebrity interview show. So we'll have reality stars and people that have a film coming out, and a lot of his friends from the industry, they come on, and it's a one-on-one interview show.
And that, again, is done in your house?
No, that's actually done. We have a studio in the city.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
We have a club provides us with a studio there. So we drive into Manhattan every Wednesday and we film the show there.
Very cool. And then Tech News Weekly. There's a well-named podcast, if I do say so myself.
You know, it's exactly what it sounds like. It'd be funny if it had nothing to do with tech and it wasn't weekly. I think that would be the big thing. But it's just a tech show. You know, we talk about the week's thing, whatever happened during the week in technology. That's what we talk about. And I'm on the website now. We have the Free For All. That's one of my favorite shows. It's myself, a guy from the neighborhood, Coco, and Spencer Coburn. We do a guy's call-in show. Guys call in. They talk about anything. We could talk about sports. We could talk about politics, whatever the topic is that day, whatever we decide to talk about. And we do no prep for that show either. We just Wow. go in there. We have a glass of wine and we just talk. Picks of the week. We talk about products, tech, websites, whatever we like for that week. I don't consider that a podcast. It's just a, you know, 2 or 3 minute weekly YouTube video that whoever the guest on Tech News Weekly is, we, you know, they pick a product and we do that. We do a Big Brother reality recap show every summer when the show is on. It's actually surprisingly that I actually want to say people always ask me what kind of show they should do. If you're into a TV show, cover it.
Yeah.
Because that's huge. We started doing this about 3 years ago, and I was so shocked the first time we put that thing out on iTunes. I mean, we did – it was just something for my wife and I to do. We really liked the show, and we were just hanging out and doing a podcast, and I was blown away on how many people found that show. I think the first show that we put out, we had like 1,000 subscribers.
Wow.
I mean, insane. It was crazy, and for a long time, that was the number one show that we had. It's crazy. Talking about crazy, another big show that we have is The Bald Truth. It's a hair loss show.
Well, I'm going to start listening to that one soon, I think.
Spencer Krobin, he does that show as well. He's been on the radio for 15 years. He brought the show over from terrestrial radio and XM to GFQ, and he does video. He has a beautiful studio in L.A., and that's one of our biggest shows. Then we have a comic show. We cover comic books. We have the IIB Spotlight, which I do for the IIB. We have This Week in Radio Tech, Kirk Harnack, Chris Tobin, Tom Ray, and Chris Tarr host that. It's about technology that is used in radio. So it's a bunch of radio engineers talking shop. That's actually a fascinating show, and you learn a lot from that if you're interested in radio.
That's one I might go, all right, I'm going to be tuning into that one. That one sounds cool.
You know what? When they start talking about transmitters and RF burn, that's when I check out. I'm like, okay, this is just getting too crazy. Then we have the total opposite end of that. We have a wrestling show. We talk about professional wrestling, and you know, that's something that I was never able to leave in the past. I was a big wrestling fan when I was a kid. My grandfather used to go to the Garden to watch Bruno Sammartino, and my dad was a big fan of it. So I do a wrestling recap show. So we talk about professional wrestling. We have the T4 show with Michael Manna and Josh Coleman. It's a tech-based show. They do more gadgets and gaming. And we have Lunatic Radio, which is our shock jock late night show.
Wow. Now, how many of those do you do? A lot of those, actually.
I do. I'm doing about 5 or 6 of them now. I've actually pulled back, and I'm doing less now, and I'm adding more shows.
Wow. Now, how much of your day, like, okay, you're getting ready to do, you know, What the Tech. What's a day in the life of you to do that? Like, how much prep do you do for one episode?
For that show, actually, I do a lot of prep. That's one of the ones that I actually put in a lot of effort, because I have to kind of keep up with the news, and I have to know what I'm talking about. So we're talking about, you know, Nokia being acquired by Microsoft. I kind of have to know what I'm talking about. So that's one of the shows I put in a couple hours of doing homework and doing the research for that week and that day. Whatever's happening to kind of bring it up.
Because I know, you know, when I was on the IAIB Spotlight, you know, that's an hour-long show. You know, usually I tell people it's about 4 minutes per minute of podcast. So that would be like 4 hours of prep. Is that, you think, about right for some of the shows you're doing where it's not an interview? Now, obviously an interview you still kind of have to prep for. But
I mean, for our interview, you made it really easy. So that was no prep needed. I just let you talk, and that was great for me. Some shows, I mean, what I like to do is trying to keep up with all the topics that we're going to talk about for that week. So if I'm doing the wrestling show and the comic book show and the wrestling and the tech show, I try to keep up throughout the entire week, so it's less prep on the day. It's almost like cramming for an exam, you know, 20 minutes before you have a test. That's the worst thing. The best thing to do is, you know, read a little here, read a little there, make a couple notes here and there. I don't know how many hours I probably spend on it, but maybe 2 hours per show.
Yeah. Because I think that's one of the keys. I think a lot of people think you just flip on the mic and, you know, that works for the free-for-all. That's kind of the charm of that show. But you've got an audience of people calling in there. So it is going to be kind of – you've got the I'm not sure what's going to happen factor on that show, which I think would make it interesting. But you do have to kind of have some prep time to you know, sharpen the axe a bit on whatever the topic is going to be.
You know, I feel more pressure with the 1 hour shows than I do with the 2 hour shows, because with the 2 hour show, you could kind of slow it down and look it up while you're talking about it. And, you know, go to the chat room. So you're allowed a little bit more room, more wiggle room. But when it's a 1 hour show and it's boom, 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 you got to keep the topic going. You kind of have to prep for that show.
Yeah, that's the case. It's a lot of times people think it would be easier to do a shorter show. And I'm like, you actually have to really figure out, okay, what are the key points I need to hit here? Because the time is clicking by as you're talking. And it actually, in some cases, makes a better podcast, depending on, you know, what the topic is and things like that. Because you really have to focus on, okay, what do I want to say in these 15 minutes as opposed to an hour or a half hour, things like that. You have to really whittle it down and say, okay, this is the main point I want to make. And you just jump right to it.
We have another show. We have another show on the network, My Take Radio, and he does a show from 11 to 2 a.m., 11 p.m. to 2 a.m. every Thursday.
Wow.
And it's his take on whatever. So he actually has to do a lot of prep for the show because he has, you know, 3 or 4 hours to fill.
Yeah.
With taking phone calls, talking about, you know, whatever the topic is for that day. It's you know, a general guys-based show.
Interesting. Well, you said at the beginning a lot of your popularity came just from word of mouth, and that's kind of how the word spread. What are you doing now to kind of grow your audience?
You know, basic Twitter, Facebook, interacting in other communities. I think that's a huge help whenever people are, you know, they come to me and they go, well, Twitter's not really working for me, or Facebook has done nothing. I always tell them, go and find the community that, you know, correlates with your audience. So if you're doing I'll give an example. Someone that I know, a podcaster, he's on the IIB. He's doing a show about plastic models, you know, model cars and planes. So he has found the community online that's all they do is talk about that, and he has built his show around that community. And I mean, he has a tapped in audience. He has an audience to build off of. And it's a very niche thing, but I always tell people, if you have a niche show, if you have a, you know, let's say with you, you do a show about podcasting. And what are you doing? You're not just going on Twitter and promoting it. You're not going on Facebook. You're involved in the community. You're going in the Facebook groups and the Google groups, and you're talking to other podcasters. And I think that's the best way to build your audience. Build it based on who's going to be watching. And you know what? Create a reputation for yourself. Don't go in there and spamming. Go and help people.
Yeah, that's I learned that. That's a lesson from 2005. I forget what the board was, but I walked in, was like, somebody had like one post, you know, and I was like, oh yeah, this is really good. Here's how I can help. And then the rest of my post was just about, I've been doing a podcast for such and such for so long, and here's where you can find it, and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, yeah, I was like, you were instantly labeled a spammer, and I was kicked out. And I
gotta see. Hi, I'm Dave. Look at my show. Goodbye. One post. That's it. You know? Yeah. But I mean, but again, this goes back to what we were saying. We didn't know that wasn't the way you should, you know, we didn't know that. We just went in there like, oh, okay, this it's a podcasting website. Let me go and promote my show. But now I think there's other ways. You know, you see it in the group. You know, there's a lot of great guys out there, a lot of people that you could trust. You're one of those names. Ray is another one. Daniel's another one. And, you know, there's a way to promote what you're doing, but not go in there and write, oh, hi, this is what I just did. Check it out. Yeah. A lot of times when I see you promoting even something on your website, you're going based on what someone is asking. So if someone is asking, hey, what kind of mixer I should buy? You're going to write, you know, I checked that. I reviewed this mixer. Here's a link to my review. You know what? That is promotion, but that's the right way of doing it.
Well, we've mentioned the IAIB. Why don't you give us a little insight into how that came about and what you're doing with that? And it is a great community.
So I, along with Spencer Coben, we co-founded this. And we really wanted to be the central hub for internet broadcasting. If you have a question, if you're learning how to podcast, or if you just anything with internet broadcasting, you know, we have a phenomenal forum there with a lot of experts on there. And it just feel free to come in there and ask your question and meet other people and to, you know, even promote your audience, because promote your show to the audience, because I don't necessarily find it a negative if there's a room for you to do it. We also offer news and we do blogs. We don't charge fees, obviously. We're not looking to make a profit off of you know, the people that are joining. We really just want there to be a central place for you to go to get archived information. There's a lot of information on Google. There's a lot of information on Facebook, but by Google, I mean the Google communities. But it's not really archived. So if you look back within a month, that information is not going to be there anymore. It's somewhere, you know, down the page, you know, 15 pages in. But we want it to be archivable, and we want people to come in there and check out, you know, if you have a mixer question, you could just go in there and Google it and it'll come up. And so we want it to be a resource for people to use. And that's really been the motto. You know, we let the community decide what works and what doesn't. If there's a thread that's thriving, and that's a community that's thriving and not me.
Very cool. And again, what's the website address for that?
So it's iBroadcastNetwork.org is the website. Membership, again, is free. You could go and sign up. We have to approve it manually to prevent spammers. So it's not this elitist thing. We're not letting people in. We welcome everybody, all types of internet broadcasters. And we also have a forum that's a separate registration. And if you, anybody could join that, pretty much. If you don't even don't have a show, you could join that. But if you are signing up for the forum, for the main site, you have to be involved in some sense in broadcasting
there
and
you
podcasting.
Go. Well, let's talk about a high point and a low point. Let's start with a low point. Looking back over your years of doing this so far, any like one that you go, oh man, that was just the epic, just up in flames fail that stands out.
You know, we were talking about advertisers, you know, losing that advertiser. We made a couple mistakes in the past. We've lost a couple advertisers, but, you know, we've learned from that. Much like anybody else, you're going to make mistakes when really there's no guidance and there's no set way of doing it. Those have been low points because, you know, when it hurts your pocket, that's definitely a low point. High points, I mean, there's so many great things. Publicity and press that we've gotten. Achievements over the last couple of years. I think we're somewhere like 30 million live total viewers overall.
Wow.
We've gotten that. I mean, there's a lot of high points. I think at the end of the day, I mean, to be able to do this as a career and to, you know, have a phenomenal community that supports everything that we do and, you know, just the relationships that I built with other broadcasters because I've been doing a podcast. Those are tremendous high points. You know, I've met a lot of great people over the last couple of years and, you know, friendship is something that you can't really take away. That's it's an amazing thing that, you know, in 2013, I could pretty much build a TV studio in my living room and roll out of bed and do a couple shows and go back up and, you know, have a glass of wine in the middle of the day.
There you go.
You know what? I'm going to take back all of that. The highest of high points is that I could have a glass of Pinot Grigio at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and not have any pants on and nobody's going to judge.
There you go. That's
it. That's why I do it. Forget about the money. Forget about the viewers. It's all about having a glass of Pinot Grigio with no pants.
That is a beautiful thing right there.
No, a lot of people wouldn't find it beautiful.
Yeah, there you go. Well, that's it. Who doesn't want to walk around the house naked? That's always fun.
Dave, I did a show. I think it was like one of our busy days. I did four shows that day. I had a button down. And I had just gym shorts on the entire time.
There you go. That's the beauty.
It was so hot in this office. I couldn't.
Wow. Well, I did want to ask. I saw one thing on your website. I wanted to ask you how it's working. I know when you go to, you know, again, the website is gfqnetwork.com. I think the first time, I think it's only the first time you go there, you have a pop-up that says click here to bookmark your Amazon link. And
yeah, we just started that. It's interesting. You know, we have seen an increase in the Amazon link and the people that are clicking on it. You know, we were able to kind of track it and we know where people are coming from. But it's actually an awful time to do it because it is the holiday season. So a lot of those people are clicking on it because they are going to use it.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have a better sense of it in January and February if that's actually helping.
Right.
But I have seen an increase. Is it this mind blowing? Wow, this is wow. Look at all that traffic. Not really. I think people default to clicking X. It's just an experiment that we're trying. And you know, if it's not going to work, we don't want to continue putting it up there. And we want to have as little annoyance on our audience as possible. But it is. But the Amazon stuff, that is something that has been tremendous, and I'm blown away by it. You know, we do donations. People could donate, and people could tip us. But that's not something that we ever publicize on the show. I for whatever reason, I wish I was comfortable enough to pitch it. Mm-hmm. It just for whatever reason, it's something in my head. I have a very difficult time saying like, hey guys, you know, tip some money to us, donate some money. But instead, we do the Amazon thing. So we tell people if you want to support what we're doing, if you like what we're doing, when you shop on Amazon, because we know everybody does, click on that little Amazon thing and just, you know, we got a tiny little credit from the sale. And that's really been working. We've actually had more success with that than a lot of other campaigns that we've had.
Yeah, I always tell people, you know, pennies make dollars. And if you make it easy, and I started doing a thing with who did I steal this from? Jay Moore. I said, if you use my Amazon link, once you buy it, send me an email and tell me what you bought, because you can't tell who's buying what. And so now, and I said, and I'll mention you on the show. And yeah. Already I have people going, hey, Dave, I just bought some DVDs. Thanks so much for the show. And it's a cool way to just say, hey, I want to thank Karen and Steve and this and that. And hey, let me know how that movie was. I might get that one myself. So it's just another way to interact with your audience, because that was the whole thing. It's like, how can I give them credit, you know, and make them part of the show again? And I thought, well, you know, if you want, you don't have to do this, but click on the banner. And if you do, hey, thanks so much. And let me know what you bought. I'll thank you on the show. And
sometimes they don't want to know.
Yeah, because it's like, please don't tell people that I'm buying this. Yeah. So then that might not work in some cases.
Yeah, sometimes they don't want to know what's happening. So
yeah.
I don't like to out those people.
Yeah. All right, well, the one question I always ask everybody, and you can cheat with your phone or whatever, I call it the last five and five, which is not really what were your last five podcasts that you listened to, but what were, or I'm sorry, not your favorite five podcasts, but what were the last five that you listened to? Can you think of those?
The last five. I can. I can't remember the order, but I'll tell you. I probably This Week in Radio Tech with Leo Laporte.
Okay.
Because he really has set the standard for video radio. Oh, yeah. You know, video format on the internet. There's nobody that does it better than him. Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez, because I'm still a big wrestling fan. What else have I listened to? Joe Rogan Experience. I listen to him. Mark Maron's podcast.
There you go.
And what else have I listened to today, this week? I can't think of a fifth one. I got four. I could tell you right now, if you give me a second, I could go and look. I listened. I'll tell you what. Broadcast Now with Stephen Haywood. He does a show about, you know, internet broadcasting technology.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I listened to that. And it's actually, I've learned a lot from that show.
Broadcast Now. I will have to check that out. And then last but not least, of course, the always typical question of, for somebody who's just starting out podcasting, you know, what words of wisdom would you bestow upon them?
I would tell everybody, if you're starting out to do this, forget about the money. Do it as a hobby first.
Yep.
Let it grow. See if you enjoy it. And once you build the audience, the money will come. Getting the money is easy when you have the audience, but you have to build the community and you have to build the audience. So forget about the money. Build the audience first. When you have the audience, that's when you could talk about monetizing. Because even if you can right now and you don't have a significant audience, that advertiser will not really be happy if, you know, they're not getting the results.
Right.
At the end of the day, you want to keep that advertiser every month. I think I told you this. Somebody sent me an email. He's like, oh, and he was showing off about it. I get a new advertiser every month. And I asked him how many times they come back, and he goes, none. I go, that's not a good thing. You've had 12 advertisers that you've lost.
Yeah.
We don't have too many people that are advertising on internet broadcasting and podcasting. It's still new to people.
Well,
the old way of doing things is still happening.
And the time you're spending getting a new advertiser on board and explaining the process and getting the link set up, you could spend that time on prepping for your next show and creating better content.
Yeah, it's work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. Anybody that asks me for advice, I always tell them, grow the audience, get better at what you're doing, learn the technology, make sure it sounds good, and it'll happen. Just you got to take the proper steps.
Yeah, and you said you were doing it, what, a year and a half before the first sponsor came on?
About a year and a half, but we didn't start really making, you know, didn't become like a big thing till 2011. I mean, that was the first year that we're like, wow, okay, we're on to something.
Well, dude, I got to say thank you so much for kind of sharing your story. It's really interesting, and I love the insights that you've shared with, you know, all along the way, different things you've picked up, and it is interesting to hear how you start off with some webcams in a dark room, and now when I see you on the Podcasters Roundtable, you got this really cool, sweet, well lit system, and you're switching your camera and the whole nine yards. It's really you've come a long way, man. You are to be commended, and keep doing what you're doing.
Dave, I'm going to be honest. This is just an 8x8 concrete room. It's all green screened. This is all green screen. None of this is real. But I appreciate it, Dave. I mean, thank you for having me. I've been a big fan of your show for a while, and I really appreciate you having me on here.
Well, thank you much. Everybody, again, go over to gfqnetwork.com and check out any of those shows.
And there you go. A lot of really cool things we learned there. Number one, his first podcast, he said it himself, was awful. So don't feel bad that no matter what you do, when you put out that first episode, 10 episodes later, you're going to go, man, that was awful. Because you're just going to get better at it. And it took him a year and a half to get a sponsor. Not 7 episodes, not 6 months, a year and a half. This is why we say you got to have the passion, because it's going to take a little while to build up that audience. And he also said that's the step. Build your audience, then you can monetize. Not monetize and hope an audience shows up to listen to you monetize. It just doesn't work that way. He said, we talked about going live. Live is a lot of fun. It's also a lot of work, adds a lot of complexity to the process. And in the end, he said it was kind of a 10-3 ratio, that the fact that more people were listening to his podcast than were showing up live. So keep that in mind. And also, he mentioned a lot of prep work. He mentioned if you want to check out his network for podcasters, for internet broadcasters, you can find that at ibroadcastnetwork.org. And again, it was all about building the audience first. So if you're looking to start a podcast, I got one place for you, schoolofpodcasting.com. Actually, I have two places for you. Schoolofpodcasting.com has step-by-step tutorials that'll walk you through the entire process from planning, and that's a big one, planning, to recording, to publishing it, to promoting it. It's all there step by step, and you can go out, use the coupon code LISTENER, and that'll save off the first month. Now, if you want a more specific, you want to work with me, I'm starting another How to Podcast class. This is going to start basically towards the end of January. And so it'll end in February. That way it's 6 weeks. We meet every Saturday for 2 hours, and we walk you through the entire process. And if you're interested in that, go over to howtopodcast.com. This will be starting up very soon. And it's great. I call it group coaching, and a lot of fun. So that's another way you can podcast. The third way, I guess I should say, is if you do want to just go one-on-one, I do that as well. So if you're interested in that, go out to schoolofpodcasting.com/contact, and we can set up a time where you and I just talk about your podcasting needs. So thank you so much for tuning in. We do have some great shows coming up in the future. I'm going to talk about the Spreaker RSS feed, how you can have it suck in your feed, and now I'm going to tell you that's not a really good idea. I'm going to talk about some really bad media hosts that I keep stumbling across that people are using that I'm like, wow, that's just bad. Because really, that's my goal, is to not only get you starting a podcast, but get you starting a podcast in the right direction without spending thousands of dollars in the wrong direction. It's amazing. So we've got that coming up. I'm going to talk about how to get that cart behind the horse. A lot of people calling up saying, I want to do this and that. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You haven't even picked the name of your podcast yet, and you're asking me about monetization. We're going to talk about that in the future as well. And again, I'm going to say, if you have one, it's a hard question to answer. I want to hear, what is your absolute favorite podcast? Again, we're looking for, what's the name of it? Where can I find it? What's it about? And more importantly for me, why you love it. That's what I'm really interested in. Plus, I get to spotlight podcasts. Plus, we get to spotlight you. Tell us where we can find your podcast, if you have one, and your name, obviously. And that'll be coming out later on in the month. Hope you're having a great holiday season. Thank you so much. And we'll see you again real soon with another episode of the School of Podcasting's Morning Announcements. Until then, hope to see you on the inside. And class is dismissed. Wishing you